You're listening to New Hampshire Now, presented by the New Hampshire College and University Council, and also by New Futures.
New Hampshire Now, on 91450 and nhtalkradio.com. I am Chris Ryan. I appreciate you joining us for the program. We are inside the Concord Photo Service Main Street Studio. This hour of the program is presented by the Prescription Center, and the segment of the show brought to you by the Concord Photo Service and the Photo Idea Center, located at 29 North Main Street in Concord. Concord Photo Service, working to preserve your memories to last a lifetime. So we're going to talk here in this segment with Mike Dennehy, who, of course, is a veteran of the New Hampshire primary, one of the top campaign managers the state has seen, the architect John McCain's come from nowhere, really.
Nowhere. 2000
campaign. Let's start with that.
Yeah.
And Pete Buttigieg is kind of the John McCain of this race, where Buttigieg, and this is, Steinhauer has been saying this for a while, and there's no exaggeration, he was the longest of long shots. Like, he was the longest shot in this field. Like, behind Marianne Williamson and Andrew Yang, there was Pete Buttigieg. And I see him now being, if the primary were held today, which of course it's not, you know, you look at, say, the final four here in New Hampshire, I see Buttigieg, Kamala Harris, Biden, and Bernie. So tell me a little bit about what you see from Buttigieg, and does he have, you know, some of that McCain type of magic in a large field where he could resonate for a long period of time?
I would say the verdict is still out on whether he has that McCain-style magic. One thing he very clearly does have that differentiates himself from the whole field is his approach and his style and his mannerisms.
He's very comfortable with who he is.
Very comfortable. He's got a very calm demeanor, which is disarming in some ways. It's very different from all the other candidates, from the Beto arm waving, from the Elizabeth Warren kind of
intensity.
And I think it's very appealing. But I don't know if the Democrats overall will think that's appealing. Well, really what it's going to come down to for the Democrats is, what kind of person do they want against Trump? Do they want someone who's going to fight? If they do, I don't think they're going to go for Buttigieg.
You know who he kind of reminds me of is Ben Carson, where Buttigieg says his language, if you read it, is as strong, if not stronger, than some of the others.
Yeah.
But when you hear him deliver it, he speaks in a way that is completely different than all the other candidates.
Totally.
And Ben Carson would walk around with his hands together as if praying, and the microphone in between his hands, and would be espousing some of the harshest rhetoric and you know, you might say extremist viewpoints I have ever heard. But he did it in a way that was like, everybody's like, oh, yes.
Yeah, right.
Yes. And we do. Oh, yes. That's interesting.
Like, and really, Chris, it's a perfect analogy, because I am a conservative Republican.
Yeah.
And I like Buttigieg's approach.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't help but like the guy.
Yeah.
Really. So I think it could be a double-edged sword for him, depending on what ultimately the Democrats want up against Donald Trump. Yeah. Are they going to want someone who's, you know, a slash and burn, punch you in your face? Or are they going to want someone like Buttigieg, who's got a calm demeanor? It's going to be you couldn't get a better difference between Trump and Buttigieg.
What I'm interested to see with him, and he's going to be in New Hampshire this weekend, he's going to be in Concord on Saturday at Gibson's at 10:30, is once the scrutiny starts to focus on him, if it starts to focus on him, how is he going to respond to that, particularly when it comes from Trump and from, you know, individuals who are very, very harsh in their rhetoric? He and his husband are, just phenomenal. If you follow them on Twitter, they're super joyful and they are happy, and they hit Chasten, who I believe is how you pronounce his husband's name. He was talking about sitting in the car and listening to the end of Taylor Swift songs, and there's just this authenticity and realness to them that is, and relatability. But what does happen when they are challenged, and when people say vicious, horrible things about them, which is terrible. It's terrible that we live in this type of environment. But, you know, is that gonna change them, or are they going to still campaign with this joy? Because if they do, I do believe that you can compete and defeat bullying and animosity. We've seen this through the course of our history with kindness and joy.
Such a big believer in that. I actually, it's impossible to know how another candidate will be attacked. I don't feel like there'll be personal attacks against Buttigieg.
In the primary, but if he were the nominee.
But maybe even then, because, you know, I think, I would never predict that. I get what Donald Trump's going to do.
Let's not go there.
But you know what? He is so weak as an elected official. I think that's his weakness.
Yeah.
Like, he's going to have to tell the Americans, what did you do in South Bend to make the community and the city better? And how are you going to translate that to the entire United States of America? That's
South Bend,
a big
Indiana
leap.
Is the same size as Manchester, New Hampshire.
Right.
So it is, and this is why he was the longest of long shots to begin with. Like, can you see Joyce Craig running for president of the United States? I mean, that's basically an equivalent.
Yep, that's right. And so I think that's ultimately his Achilles heel.
Right. That he doesn't have the elected experience. And, but, you know, we're in a different type of environment.
For sure.
It used to be that experience was what you looked for in a candidate, and now it's, that's not necessarily a great thing to be experienced. And to have, like, Joe Biden, Hillary Clinton, individuals like Jeb Bush, John Kasich, and others who could list accomplishments and policies and say, I know how to deal with this problem because I did something about it.
Yep.
And that's not really where we are at this point. But his is such a big jump. Where, you know, he can't say, I'm a billionaire and I've run this company and I've dealt with international things and I've been on the public. I mean, Donald Trump was different in that he had been in the spotlight as a celebrity for decades.
Yeah.
So there was a feeling that people knew who he was, which moves to our next topic.
Yes.
And that is, you know, a lot of times in political races, we look at it as if it's a pennant race in baseball, where there's going to be kind of an ebb and a flow and ups and downs, and that's, you know, a surprise candidate's going to emerge. But more often than not, just like baseball, at the end of the day, the Red Sox and the Yankees are atop the AL East. And Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden are the Red Sox and the Yankees. And there is a reason that they are the front runners at this point in time. And they've been largely, despite being the front runners, written off by the media and by the electorate, who are looking for something else. But that something else, even, you know, as we've gone through this process now, just, you know, for 4 months, which is a significant amount of time, no one is really touching their numbers in New Hampshire or nationally. And, you know, Joe Biden's obviously been raked over the coals this last week, and we'll get to that. But I don't know exactly what is going to change their numbers, because they are such known commodities.
Yes.
And since there are so many other candidates, for them to get to, you know, for a Kamala Harris or a Beto O'Rourke or Tim, Mayor Buttigieg to get to that 20%, they have to consolidate a tremendous amount of support that really isn't going to go from anywhere from Biden or from Bernie.
No, I think this is a great conversation to have, because if you look at Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden, you're talking about between 50 and 60% of the Democratic electorate is for them right now.
Yeah.
50 to 60%. And then the other 15 candidates are sharing 40% of the vote. That's a big problem for those guys. Like you said, they have to consolidate. But more importantly, these other candidates that are in double digits, being Kamala Harris and Beto maybe, and Buttigieg is approaching there, they need to give Sanders and Biden supporters a reason to support them over those guys who are, like you said, known quantities, well-liked, well-established. And that's not easy to do unless you start basically one-on-one advertising against them.
Right. And you have to pick the right ones.
The right
ones. And that was the big problem with Right to Rise and Jeb Bush's super PAC the last time around, is they hit everybody except Trump. They were in and against Trump.
Never.
Trump was the biggest problem, but they hit everybody else.
Yes.
And So let's look at this past week and the stories that have come out in regards to Joe Biden and the type of hand-wringing that has taken place. I've been clear about this. In covering Joe Biden in 07 and 08, have had a number of personal circumstances with him where he'd put his arms on my hands on my shoulders, go forehead to forehead during the course of an interview, and he does this has done this with people for a long time. And I think that he needs to acknowledge and understand that he is not the sole purveyor of what is appropriate and inappropriate. If a person feels that something's inappropriate, they have the right to the right to that opinion. I feel his campaign needs to address that, and he needs to talk about why he does this and say he's not going to do it anymore.
That's right.
And that should be it, for in my view. But outside of that, do you see there being a, as you referenced, Biden and Bernie Sanders are taking up a large portion of the vote, and these campaigns understand that. Do you see an attempt here taking place by the other campaigns, whether it's Bernie or other folks, to try to force Joe not to run?
Without a doubt. I don't think they're getting together, like physically or even literally getting together to go after.
There's no coercion.
There's no coercion.
Or collusion.
Collusion. But they're not. Let's face it. They all know what they need to do, and they don't need Biden in the race.
Right.
It's going to make their jobs harder. So, yes, I believe they are tactically making a conscious effort to try to push him out by making this a big deal. And there has been no claim of sexual assault. It is just the way he conducts himself, and it's not appropriate anymore.
Right, and awkward, inappropriate.
And I think you hit the nail on the head, though, Chris. He has to acknowledge it, and this is the problem he has right now, because his campaign isn't up and running.
Right.
It's not operational, so they have done a very poor job combating it.
Right.
If he had come right out on day one and said, you know what, I am a very affectionate guy, and I need to stop being so affectionate.
Right. No, I think it's really easy to explain it, and I think you have to do it via an Instagram video or something of that nature. It has to be the candidate.
I understand. Yes.
You're not going to launch for another 3 weeks from what we're hearing. So you can have the candidate out talking about it.
Because that's right.
They really think you need to, because you have to have him. You have to see him. He has to get played in his responses when they're talking about this on cable news. He has to get shared by folks on social media.
Yeah.
It needed to be him. And I would just start by saying he's experienced me as Joe Biden for the moment have experienced a lot of loss in my life. I've had a lot of tragedy, and I want to make the most impact and show people that I care about them and that they're special people, and maybe I've gone overboard.
Yeah.
It's really easy.
It is definitely easy.
But to say, I've never done anything that I view as being inappropriate, that's
just doesn't
not a good
cut
response.
It. Nope, and he has to go further.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, though, Chris, knowing, my mom is 80 years old, and I know she's stuck in her ways. He's what, 70 what?
76.
70-something.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be hard for him to change.
Yeah.
It's going to be really hard for him to change
what
he has done his entire life. And so to say
And there's
going to
be an awkwardness in that, too.
Exactly, So,
I saw a photo of, and this is, I saw a photo, I'll just say a photo of a political candidate. And they were looked like they were going to place their arms around an individual, two individuals, a male and a female. And they had just kind of stopped from doing that. And because there is this feeling now of what do you do?
Definitely.
And so that's where Biden's going to be. He's gonna feel awkward being standoffish because he has done that. He has been, with males, females.
Yep,
he has been this
matter.
Way for years. And you're really right, because what you want from your candidate, and what you want as a candidate, is to be authentic and be who you are. And this is who you are.
Who
and you've been this way for 45 years as a public figure.
I don't know as though he could actually say, I'm not going to do it anymore, because I think that's too hard.
Yeah.
But he could obviously say, try and do better.
Yeah.
But it is who I am. I'm an affectionate guy.
Right.
I care for people.
Right, right. And I've experienced loss in my life.
Yeah, and I think that's right.
That's the way that I think you have to go about doing it. And I don't think there's anything malicious in the way that that Joe Biden has conducted himself. I really don't.
I don't either.
And or any intent or anything of that nature. So
not
I feel that it's kind of it's an issue that is needed to get addressed, and I feel like they're not doing a great job of addressing it, but it's good to kind of do it now And as Rath said earlier, you know, you want to make sure that when he does do this, that it's just one time and that's over. Like, yeah. McCain was really good in that when McCain would admit wrongdoing or yeah. they made a mistake, like, he'd have the ability to, like, end it then. Like,
yes.
this is, I'm going to do this once, and that's yeah. it for the most part.
Yeah.
And that's what Biden needs to do with this. With Elizabeth Warren's problem is that, you know, she has been for the last few, last month or so, until this, until I brought it up here, but in other circles it gets brought up all the time. You know, she has been able, she has seen the Native American narrative sift to the backlight, but it's something that's going to continue to get brought up again because it's never like she's never been able to end it.
That's right.
And Biden needs to be able to end it. The Elizabeth Warren's candidacy continues to be. That's still a cloud that's kind of hanging over
very
her.
Very fragile.
Deciding to do the DNA test, in my view, is kind of a fatal, perhaps fatal yeah, flaw yeah, for, decision for
agreed.
Her. So Biden needs to stay away from that, and he needs to address that in a substantive way that ends it. So how do you do that? Is it an interview? Is it exhausting questions at a press conference? I don't think it's something like
no.
that. I think this is an interview that gets shared
yes.
and it just satisfies.
That's right.
Because I think he can end this.
I agree.
Yeah.
I totally agree. Because there's only been, I don't mean to say only, to minimize the two people who've spoken out against him.
Right.
And one of them is very clearly a Bernie Sanders supporter.
Yeah.
So I just don't think people are looking at it the same way they are looking at the scandalous figures in Virginia, for instance.
Yeah. Who have managed to survive
amazingly.
Right.
That's a holy cow. Yeah. I have no idea how that's happening. But so I agree with you. I think he can dispatch of this issue and try to just conduct himself in a better manner. But then you go back to what we had started talking about. How are these candidates going to eat into the Bernie Sanders
right.
and Joe Biden's 50-60% of the vote? And I think it's easier with Bernie Sanders because that's very clearly just these are progressive voters who are with Bernie, and there are other progressive candidates. Someone's going to have to consciously take him on and say, listen, I love Bernie Sanders. He represents everything I represent, but his time has passed.
Right.
His time
and
has
it
passed.
Has to be so that gets done, in my view, by a collusion type effort where there's an effort that takes place where it's kind of like Chris Christie taking out Marco Rubio.
Absolutely. Yep.
A kamikaze mission
yes.
where it's one of the debates and
yep.
you pick a particular issue. Or I think that If there's going to be an Achilles heel for Bernie Sanders, it is going to be the following. Bernie Sanders is a rich man. He's a very rich man.
Yeah, I guess I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's a millionaire.
Okay.
And he owns several homes, and, you know, he travels via private jet.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow.
So I think that that may be, you know, an area where one of the other candidates that is not necessarily going to be, you know, around for the long haul,
yeah.
ahead of New Hampshire and ahead of Iowa, that might be an area where they go in after him.
Yeah.
Is his wealth? He has said he's going to disclose his tax returns, but has not done so for
he's
the last 3 months.
Oh, okay,
That's going to be a, in my view, an issue. You have a individual who's a populist. Leader, leader of the working people, but via working in government, selling a book, his wife running a higher education entity in Vermont, he has been able to amass what is a considerable amount of wealth and has
yep.
become himself a millionaire. So I think that that's going to be a potential area, and I think, you know. Also, what has Bernie Sanders accomplished in terms of policy implementation?
That's right. Yep.
So what is going to change about him being president of the United States? And Bernie, in the last campaign, was never really pushed.
No.
Hillary Clinton just kind of let him do his thing,
that's
say
right.
what he wanted. And that's going to be different, which, to me, creates a level of intrigue about what is going on with Joe Biden, where, as you referenced, Lucy Flores, the lieutenant governor candidate in Nevada
mm-hmm.
clearly a Bernie supporter. I don't know to what extent all of this has to do with that.
Yep.
But, you know, I don't know if I'm Bernie Sanders if I'd want to keep Joe Biden out of the race at this point in time.
Because I agree.
If I'm him, do I really want to spend the next 10 months, you know, picking arrows out of my back from everybody else?
So right.
The feeling that's being pushed that Bernie Sanders is behind this, if he is behind it, it is very poor political strategy.
It is. If I'm Bernie Sanders, I want nothing more than a Bernie Sanders versus Joe Biden race.
Right.
And I think it's just so much easier to take Bernie Sanders down than Joe Biden, because the progressive vote is all about the future.
Yeah.
And Bernie Sanders doesn't represent the future. Joe Biden, I feel, is more of a moderate centrist Democrat, and that's a more, I guess, specific lane that isn't being taken by anyone else right now. So I think it's going to be someone that's either going to consolidate the progressive vote to take Bernie down, and it's going to be that person against Joe Biden in the end.
Yeah, and if I'm Kamala Harris, I'm looking at this, and I'm like, I'm going to be on the ticket no matter what.
Yes.
So I'm going to be the nominee, or I'm going to be somebody's vice presidential nominee. So I don't know if I'd be the one trying to take people out. I don't know who it would be. I mean, is it somebody that's far back right now and not getting traction? Or is it just a confluence of circumstance? I mean, it's very difficult to tell. But you know, it's been interesting. Obviously, the statements and folks have been asked about it. And you know, Elizabeth Warren was very clear about things. Julian Castro was very clear about things. I thought that Nancy Pelosi was very helpful to Joe Biden.
Agreed.
But again, it continues to get to get talked about and. The Biden folks have been unable to turn the page on this. Maybe you just let the clock continue to run, because getting back to the situation of Virginia, things have changed dramatically in terms of with Trump, in my view, in just waiting out the storm.
Yes.
And it used to be that when there was that fever pitch and when everyone was running around calling for your head, that was the point in time where you resigned. Even here in New Hampshire with Jeff Woodburn.
That's right.
And, if the party apparatus is starting to cut, you resigned. And that was kind of it. You didn't see people stay the course.
Yeah.
But now that's changed.
That like, has.
You could be under criminal indictment.
Yeah.
You could be, in an extremely uncomfortable situation like Governor Northam.
Yeah.
And just figure, things can't get worse than this. So,
might as well hang on.
Might as well hang on.
What's the downside?
I have to be one term governor anyway, so what the heck? I can only improve my public standing.
Yeah.
So, why do you think that's changed? Is it a Trump dynamic? Is it a change in our culture? Because before, generally people would, resign in those circumstances. Now, like, we look at Nixon as an example.
Yes.
Nixon might try to beat that thing.
Yeah, I do think that Donald Trump has changed the way people view these serious kind of personal allegations. Mm-hmm. And so I think they are, I don't want to say they're given more freedom or that they're, that the public is less forgiving. But I think it's more overlooked than it was before.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of sad, because we should hold elected officials to a higher standard. But Donald Trump's gotten away with it, and now many Democrats are getting away with it as well.
I think if I had to look at one big particular reason, Trump is a part of it, but I think that there's just been a change in how the general public consumes media. Mm. And there's just so much stuff that is coming at you on an hourly basis. Yeah. So like something that would stick around and there'd be this, this beating drum of one particular scandal, a new scandal comes about and it changes the narrative. And there's kind of, I think in crisis management now, there's kind of let everything sit for 48 hours, and then let's assess where things are at that point. Like, just shut off your phones and go for a walk in the woods.
Yeah.
And let's see where things are after that, and then make a determination. Where before it was like, okay, calls, meetings, Oh, it's on the nightly news now. Let's see what happens. The morning papers are there too. Like, we got to do something about this. Now it's like, let the next scandal wash this aside and then reassess where we are.
I do believe that voters have become much more cynical than they used to be.
That's also true.
Because, I mean, think about the fact that probably most candidates running for president, maybe not Bernie Sanders, but have actually smoked pot and aren't afraid to say they smoke pot.
Some are excited to say it.
Exactly. 20 years ago, that was the end of your campaign.
Right.
I mean, look what George W. Bush went through in 2000.
Yeah.
And he had a hard time dealing with the fact that he admitted to doing cocaine and other stuff. But of course, he came back and said he was saved and he doesn't do any of that anymore, which is, people are forgiving in that way. But I think they're just used to all the garbage in politics.
Yeah.
They're just used to the garbage and they desperately want to try and break through that to figure out, what are you actually going to do for me? Which is, I think, ultimately why Trump was elected.
Exactly, exactly. I mean, the celebrity first and foremost, and then the general cynicism about the overall environment.
Yes.
And, you know, these people may be bad. I may be bad.
Yes.
But I know how to. It's like, you know, hire a cook to a crook to catch a crook type thing.
Right, right.
Like, you know, like, these people may be bad. I may be bad, but I know how it all works and I'm going to make it work for you.
Mm-hmm.
And that worked.
It did. And I still actually believe he's the front runner in 2020. I still, you know.
I have to see who's nominated.
Absolutely.
But, like, I'm not counting him out by any stretch. The economy is still really good for the majority of folks. And people are cynical and, you know, I'd say somewhat selfish as well.
Yes.
And they'll be like, hey, I mean, I don't like him. I don't like I don't like the way he talks. I don't like the things that he says about people. I don't want my kids to be like him.
Yeah.
But it's working for everybody, so whatever.
Chris, seriously, the problem is, I don't see Donald Trump running a campaign like this, but why can't you just say, it's very simple, are you better off today than you were 4 years ago?
Yeah.
And not only is the economy booming, but we are, as a nation, we are safe.
Yeah.
And everyone, I think, feels, I haven't seen polling on it, but they feel so much safer than they did 4 years ago.
Yeah.
So those two things are huge for a Donald Trump re-election.
So, we talked with Lewandowski on this yesterday, and he said basically the same thing. The challenge for Donald Trump is that Donald Trump always wants to make everything about him.
Yes.
And one of the reasons he won the last campaign is the last 2 weeks of the campaign, he was actually very disciplined and made the election all about Hillary Clinton.
Yep.
So you had two unpopular candidates, and in my view, in that election, the person who the election was about at the end was going to be the one that lost. And it was about her, so he won. And it's kind of the same thing, where he actually, you know, he's not going to be able to point to a lot of specific accomplishments because he hasn't had a lot of specific accomplishments.
Right.
But the general environment, which he plays a part in and benefits from, is good.
Yep.
So he is going to be able to, to push that forth and ask that simple question. It benefits him greatly if there is a candidate on the other side that is looking to change fundamentally what America is and create turmoil in an environment that is working well. Where in the last election, Trump came in and was going to create turmoil in an environment where people were still kind of eerie about the way things were, or leery about the way things were. In this environment, he right now, and again, there's a long time before the election takes place, but he is going to be able to present a status quo that is acceptable. And he is going to, as he did in the past election, take that other person and say, look at them. They're even worse than they are.
Yes.
And Democrats have to be really leery about that when they consider who they are nominating. If it is somebody that is going to fundamentally change what America is, a capitalism versus socialism type of argument, when people think the economy is going well, that's not going to work with independence in this nation.
No, that's why I have always... over the last several months, I have said that I think Joe Biden would be the strongest candidate against Donald Trump. I think the more you're in favor of socialism, the harder it is going to be to win.
I mean, Biden, here's why Biden, we always run over because this conversation is always so good. But what Biden offers is the same to a large extent in regards to the economic side of things, and a nation that is perhaps more robust in foreign policy and is a little bit more at the forefront and cohesive and coherent on foreign policy, but a president that is more respectable.
That's right.
And is going to restore the dignity and decorum to the White House.
To the office.
So that is why, in my view, he is the strongest Democratic candidate for president, because he unlike a Buttigieg, who also, in my view, is a strong candidate for president, or Kamala Harris, who are strong candidates, he is more of a centrist, and he also has a track record of accomplishment.
That's right.
And that's not going to be debatable with him, and the Trump folks know that too.
They do.
I mean, they may be behind the other. Who knows?
Absolutely.
So, to me, yeah. I mean, he's the most concerning candidate for Trump, more, and should be the most concerning candidate for the folks in the Democratic field. We got to run, Mike.
Okay.
As always, good to see you.
Always a pleasure,
Mike Denny, here on Hampshire Now on 914.50 and nhtalkradio.com. I am Chris Ryan. This hour of the program is presented by the Prescription Center, and that segment of the show brought to you by the Concord Photo Service.
You're listening to New Hampshire Now, presented by the New Hampshire College and University Council, and also by New Futures.